Let me try and get the smile. Okay. Hey, folks. Welcome to the Wrench Turners podcast. It's a show that's all around the globe to help mechanics everywhere, to show about improving their life, their well-being, and their productivity on the shop floor. I'm your host, Mr. Joshua Taylor, founder of Wrench Turners Online. And on today's show, I get to talk to a very special guest from 5 hours in the future, Jade Price. Let's get into it. Jade, thank you very much for spending the time with us today, sharing a little bit of your insight, so on and so forth. I really look forward to kind of digging into it, how your experiences in the trade and around automotive have transpired over the last several years. I want to dig into a little bit of how obsessed you are with Hondas, as I see you have, if I get this right, because across the pond, nomenclature is a little bit different. You have a Honda Integra, probably 97, 98, 99, somewhere in there. All I could see is one headlight from the picture on your TikTok. It looks like an EP9 and a EF, if I got
very
it right.
Very close. So my dad's got a DC2. I've got an EP2 and I've got an EC9, which is the UK spec of the EF9. So you're close.
Right.
You're close.
Right. Is all of the EF in Britain EC?
So you can have the ES9, but it's a lot more harder to get hold of because it's a Japanese import. So majority of the ones that you see are EC9s.
Okay. Cool. Okay, I didn't really. Is there a lot of Japanese import in Britain?
I think there's quite a few, but I don't think there's as many as what we'd like there to be. It's a lot more harder to import and stuff like that now. So,
okay. I didn't expect Japanese import to come out. I realize that they're importing is a thing all over the globe, and I know Japanese import is happening all over the world. I get stuffed with import stuff on Facebook and all the time. It's like, I import this for $7,400, and it's a Honda Odyssey that's been completely swaggerized with lowering springs and all the rest. It's like, why would I want to import an Odyssey? It's a thing, apparently. It's a thing.
They're always better and they're always quicker, so always go JDM.
Okay, there's our answer, folks. Always go JDM. I cannot say that my experience with JDM thus far has been great. My first experience with JDM in some capacity, and it wasn't JDM, it was US spec, obviously, 240SX back in the day, and the floors rotted out underneath me, so much so that the reason why I sold it back in the day, I wish I had it, be worth a mint now, but I literally went over bumps on my way home one day, and my seat went through the floor, and I was dragging frame rails of my seat on the ground on the asphalt.
It was weight saving. That's all it was doing for you. It was weight saving.
Technology.
Having a Flintstones moment.
Exactly. Because on the passenger side, it was the footwell that rotted out. So I had to have blankets in the car. So my girlfriend at the time, which is now my wife, had to wrap up because it got so cold in the passenger seat because of all the air leaks from the rust.
I'm glad you said now wife, because I thought he was going to end it once the floor went, she went. So glad you finished it off with wife in that.
Not quite. That would have been like ejecto cedo kind of moment, but not quite. So Jade, let's get into it a little bit. So you obviously been around cars a long time. You're obviously a petrolhead. You've got a love for JDM. From the looks of your TikTok, it looks like you have some friends around the drift scene. It looks like you want to kind of get into drifting. So let's go back to your earliest moment. What got you into automotive?
So way back in the day, my granddad used to have a XR2, which is a Ford. And he started like just putting the fog lights in the center and it was just like, I didn't see any cars like that because I was so young at the time. And I just thought, oh, granddad's doing something different. And then my dad was getting into it as like he was getting older and I was starting to understand it more and just seeing him mess with it. And it was just like, I want that. I want to do that. Why is no one else doing that? And it was just from there, we started to go and watch the touring cars again with my granddad. And I loved the noise and the adrenaline that come with it. And the fact it looks so easy when you're watching it, but doing it is a complete kettle of fish. It's just so different, and it was just like, I want this, I want in. So that was it. I was taken away.
Awesome. So after that moment, what was your first experience? Where did you start turning wrenches? Did you just kind of sweep floors somewhere? What was your first experience in the trade? What did you do? What got you in the door?
So I started doing it in college. So I used to help my dad before I was in college, doing bits on his car and stuff. And it intrigued me that so much metal you could take it apart and switch this over and switch that over and make it something completely different. So I used to help my dad, and then I was like, this is it, this is me, this is something. It's not your average sort of, oh, this is a job. It was none of that. It was just like, it was just, everything was just so different. So I started to do it when I was in college, and I was just like, it felt like home. It felt like home.
Yes. Like, I did a short stint at college, thinking I was going to be a computer programmer, and I found that I couldn't stand the people that were in it. Like, I can do it. And I was decent at it. But the people around me weren't nice. Like, for lack of better, they just weren't nice. They didn't talk the same way. They didn't have the same mannerism. They didn't grow up the same way. They didn't have the same interests. They didn't have... It was nose in the computer all of the time. Now, later on in life, I'm nose in the computer all the time now. But it just didn't feel right. It didn't have that same... that same feeling, that sensation. And I've always been in cars as long as I can remember, you know, standing on the bench seat of my grandfather's old square body, pushing snow around this plow truck. And I was probably 3 years old, maybe at the time, and fixing stuff ever since. So it was like, well, maybe I should go try it. And at the time I was working full time at the grocery store, basically dropping out of cars. Let me go try and be a mechanic. And it felt like no matter how awful it got, because it got pretty bad, especially going through, you know, service manager. Like, in the time I was at my first shop, I think we had 4 service managers in 2 years or something like that. So it got pretty bad in circumstances, but it still felt like home. I get that. That's a great way to describe that. Felt like home. So you got into a shop, and did you start wrenching first?
So not at first. What I did was... start off in the service department, so I was like a customer advisor, and I was just like, oh, I don't think I'll ever be able to get into it now, because by this point I was like, trying to not expose my real age here. I think I must have been about, how long ago was it? So it must have been about 5 or 6 years ago. My God, I feel old. And I was just like, my heart just wasn't in it the same. And I was just like, I don't want to do paper. I don't want to do customers. I want to be fixing that, not. And then I mithered my boss. And I was just like, this isn't me. You know what I'm like. You know, I've always been around cars, a few illegal street races, but I've always been around cars and in that kind of scene. And I was just like, it's that. Like, if anything, I was like the Letty out of the group, out of Fast and Furious. That was me. I just wanted to be that. So after mithering a bit, getting a few extra cookies a day, and I got back in there, and it was mad how different that people said that I was, and myself being back in there to what I was when I was being a customer advisor. I didn't hate the job, but it was just like, there was no drive to it for me. Whereas there is with this. So.
I got it. It's different walking into work every day when it's a job versus like it's something you got to go, you got to do, you got to deal with people, you got to deal with paperwork, you got to do this and you got to do that and you got to show up. Otherwise, when you walk into work, it's like, I could fix cars today.
Adult Lego. That's like the only way I can think of it.
Being able to just be yourself and go into work and do something you really enjoy doing. And it's almost like taking the weight off, right?
Yeah.
Like it's like completely taking the like carrying around all this weight all of this time. I would almost liken it to anxiety, but you carry all this weight around having to do things that you don't really want to do and do it with people you don't really want to do it with and do it in a way you don't really want to do it. And then all of a sudden you get in the shop and it's like it carrying around a wrench all day in your back pocket is normal. You pick it up. Oh yeah. Yeah. That's okay. Yeah. And then you know, the tire gauge is in your pocket and you know, you got, you know, pens or Sharpies in your chest pocket. Cause you know, you got to mark stuff up and every once in a while you'll pull out a piece of tire chalk that was in your pocket for 3 days and you realize the pocket's now yellow from the chalk from being in your pocket.
Or you find that 10 milli from last week that you'd lost.
It's always the 10 milli every from last time. Week. So you get through it, you get start, you've bothered your boss enough to get in the shop. What were you working on?
I'm trying to say it without saying the company.
What kind of cars were you working on? Were you working on Audis? Were you working on Volkswagens?
Yeah,
or were you working,
I was working on Audis. Yeah,
love Audis. I've never had the opportunity to have one, but at some stage in my life, I will. I really want the 4.2 V8. Okay, Audi question. 4.2 V8, almost 10 years. The boys, and I call them the boys, Top Gear when Top Gear was Top Gear. Jeremy Clarkson made statements. The three best sounding engines of all time at the time was the Lexus V10 and then the Alfa Romeo V6. And then the top trumps was the Audi 4.2 V8 in the S4.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree? And if you agree, whether you agree or not, is it actually a pain in the ass to work on? Because I've never had the luxury of working on one.
Yes and no. Some of the bits that you may have to do on it, you think, I mean, I don't know if you want to put a bleep in this now, but you think, who the fuck built this? And gone, oh, this will be nice and easy. Yes and no, it can be, but some parts of it, it's not too bad. But when it comes to the bigger stuff being replaced, then yeah, you wouldn't mind throwing a spanner at the window or two.
Okay. Okay, and so it doesn't matter whether it's here in North America or it's across the pond. They're just as ignorant to work on, apparently. Okay, and we both have a love-hate relationship with engineers. Sometimes they get it really right, and there's some really cool stuff. And I give you an example that you may not know, considering where you live. But the Dodge Ram over here, when I think it changed in 2003 is when we got the new body style over here in North America. When the Hemi was in it, someone really intelligent put a lip on the bottom of the oil filter housing. So the oil filter goes on. There's a tiny wee lip on the bottom. That's like, okay, somebody was trying to think. But unfortunately, when you unscrew it, the first drip goes right onto the front lower crossmember. And oil goes everywhere. Like it goes everywhere. It gets on you, gets on the truck, gets everywhere. The following year, I think in half year 2003, 2004, someone had this wherewithal to put like a 4-inch or 5-inch ramp below it. So when it drips all the way forward of the frame.
Oh,
so
nice.
Sometimes the engineers are really, really intelligent, and sometimes they're really, really not. So it doesn't matter if it's Audis or Dodges. They're
I'm
either
sure there
smart
was something
or
like that with the Toyota. Where they put the oil filter, and I'm sure there was a Toyota that was the same thing. And you had like the filter was probably like that, and then you had a gap lattice to get out of, and that's after you took the under tray off, and you're just like, honest to God, you see them all the time. If you're on Facebook, Mechanic Bodge Jobs, there's some corkers in there, some corkers.
Oh, there's. I'm interested to find out what's some of your, as you put it, corkers. What is one of the worst things that you have physically put your hand on? One of the worst backyard hack job fixes that you've ever had to rectify? Because I've had to rectify, I'll give you an example of one. I have been an unfortunate soul who has left vice grips on something. Okay, I've done that. I have done it. I'm sorry. However, I have seen someone use the vice grips on purpose, leaving it on something to keep it on something. So instead of the nut on a sway bar end link. So you've got the joint that goes through the sway bar, through the hoop, the little, the opening in the sway bar, not supposed to go on the other side. I've seen a vice grip welded to the joint on the far side to keep the joint in place.
Oh,
what's something like that you've had to deal with?
I mean, luckily nothing like that as such. Oh my God. I've seen other people do things. I mean, I'm quite, I can't remember what the word is. I'm quite OCD with my work, but I've seen somebody replace a fuel filter, and the fuel filter is on the underskirt. So like where your two doors are, it's on the underneath of the bumper. And they'd left it, so you have to have like a little trim tool that kind of looks like a little V to pull the pipes off. But he'd replace it, and as he was replacing it, he just needed to shimmy it up. But he'd left that on, so it was constantly whacking the under of the body. And then the customer ring back going, oh, my car's banging, my car's done this. And he just left that trim tool on. I've seen somebody leave a ratchet underneath a, I can't even get my words out. Jade, come on. Underneath the bonnet before now when they've been changing other bits and bobs. But I can't say what it is because in case anyone listens to it and then they know the lines.
Okay, fair enough. That's about as... Okay, so have you done the tie wraps on drive shafts before to someone?
Never.
No, it's... You have to do it. You can't do it to a customer car because that would be awful and never do that. But if you do it to one of your baymates, it is as funny as it sounds, because it depends and it gets better if you put more on. The more you put on, the more asinine the noise is. Because if you just put like two on it, it's like a flap, 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 flap. And then obviously it speeds up with the drive shaft as it goes faster. But if you put more on, it sounds like something is actively cutting, like drrr, like it gets very close to wheel bearing noise. So anyway, I highly recommend, but only with people that you absolutely trust. And okay, so we're fixing Audis. We spent what's that first year? Now that you've been in the shop, what's that first year of working in the shop like?
It is a little daunting because, I mean, obviously, if you've worked on cars prior without any proper training, it's completely different to what you know when you're in a dealership. But it's nice because I feel like that first year you can really see difference from when you start to just the end of that 12 months, how completely different and how much you feel like you've achieved in it. So it's a little daunting, but it's also nice to see what you've learned and progressed to. Because there were things in there you go, oh, I'm not going to be able to do that, Jesus Christ. But by the end of that year, you're like, smash that oil change out in 10 minutes, what are you on about?
Exactly. Yeah. So did you have any challenges? Now, and I ask this for the obvious reason, you're not a man. So... did you have any challenges? And the reason why I ask this specifically, and answer if you so choose, but having not in North America, sorry, more specifically in America, where I have majority of my statistics from and some of my own statistics from, 96.4% of mechanics are men in America, which means 3.6% are women. It's very difficult for me to find those of you who are in the trade, who are turning wrenches, to talk openly about your experiences. The challenge is when I'm confronted with those who've never been in the trade, never been around the trade, who are talking about women in the trade, it's like they must go through this this insurmountable amount of difficulty being a woman in a male-dominated trade. The ribbing they must get, the potential emotional, mental fatigue that might play a role on your day-to-day because you are probably the only woman in the entire shop.
Yes.
Being very real, very open. Again, if you don't want to answer, please don't. But did you have any challenges like that? And oh, if you did?
Oh, yeah, definitely. last time I checked, I'm still not a man anyway, so that's always a good point. But I definitely had struggles. So when I was in college, like I was saying, and I did mechanics and stuff, I went out to go and try and get an apprenticeship. So it was like doing so many days at college and then working at a shop for so many days to try and help with my career. And the one place is only like one sort of garage near me. And I'd gone in there. So bear in mind, I was like 17 at the time. And I'd gone in and I was like, shitting myself. British humour, here we go. Shitting myself. And I was like, right, I've got to do this. So I goes in and go, can I speak to the manager, please? And he's like, yeah, why? And I was like, all right, I just want to speak to him about some work. And he's like, all right, okay. And he goes, how can I help? And I was like, I want an apprenticeship. I'm doing mechanics in college, so I'd really like an apprenticeship. And he laughed. And I was like, oh, all right, he's testing me for banter. Laughed a little bit back, and then he went, 1 second. Gone and got all the lads out of the workshop, and it wasn't a massive workshop, so it was only about 4 or 5 of them. Told them all, and then they just all laughed. They literally laughed until I left. So it took me a while to get back into the trade because I was just like, how am I supposed to do it if they're not supporting me? How am I going to get anywhere? So when I'd found this dealership that I'm at now, it was only when I'd got to know the lads there and how much I was missing it that I'd mithered my boss, because I'd got along with the lads so well in the back and I thought, I know these aren't going to judge me. They're a great bunch of lads. Yeah, they do your head in, but it's home. They're like home. They're the kind of people that if I was to ever leave, I'd miss them. Because they're like extended brothers, so you will get things like that. But it'll piss them off more if you stick to your guns and you're doing better. I don't think I would have got as far as what I have now if I'd got a job there. I've had so many more other opportunities, and now I just think, oh, fuck you to them. I drive past it even to this day. I'm 31 now, and I drive past it till this day, and I'm like, it's gone past him. So I think just you're going to have it hard, but it's a lot more different now, a lot more different. People are a lot more accepting. I was the first girl ever at my dealership. I did go to a Porsche garage for a bit, and I was the first girl ever there. And now we've actually got a new girl into, because I went back to Wilder, but we've got a new girl there now. We've got another girl, so it's just like, it's great. I've had other girls message me before now. I've even had a few lads message me saying, you know, I'm nervous about going. Don't be, you're the only person you've got for the rest of your life is you. So you need to make you happy. Because if you don't make you happy, then what are you living for? You're only going to regret it. So if you want to do it, just fucking do it.
That's beautiful. I apologize in past tense for your experience, but I'm happy that that experience gave you drive and not bitterness or resentment. It's unfortunate that you had to go through that, but to give you an opposite example, when I came off the bench, after being on the bench for so long, some of the people that I trusted and respected on the bench, the lads in the shop, told me that there's no way I could ever write service. I was going to fail. I'd fail in 90 days, like 30 days, 90 days. You're not going to make it. You're not gonna be able to write service. You don't know what you're doing. You've been writing service for too long, right? You've been turning a wrench for too long. You don't know what you're doing. You don't know how, you don't have any of the skills, da 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 da. Like in 90 days, I was competing for the top sales in the service drive. So I really like that message, that stick to your guns. If you want to do something, you want to go get something, go do it. I love that. I really appreciate that, Jade. I really do. I'm glad to see that you sticking to it has got you someplace that continues to feel like home. That's really, really important from not just a production standpoint, because if you feel comfortable somewhere, you're going to produce way more work than someone who doesn't.
Yeah, 100%. And like at the time, I cried. I literally cried like a girl. But I did, and like when I look back now, I think I'm glad because it made me stronger. It doesn't matter what profession you're in or whereabouts you want to go into the motor industry. You've generally only got you for the rest of your life. So why not put you first for a change? You want to do it, do it. Half of them that say this shit are going to be coughing dodgers anyway and be oxygen stealing in the next few years anyway, so they ain't going to be around for long enough. So do you? Because you only spend more time regretting that you didn't try rather than trying and failing. So just anybody, just to do it.
Without question. I like... how you put that, more importantly, that you just have yourself and only yourself over your lifetime. What they say, if you allow them to affect what you do, they're making the choices for you, not you making the choices for yourself.
Yeah, right? 100%.
If you allow that to enter into the equation. I would suggest that it would have been not just mentally detrimental, it would have been career detrimental. I think you're right. It would have been detrimental to you long term to have worked there. Had he said yes, right? Had he said yes and you did work there, they're just going to find ways to make your life difficult. They're not going to be cooperative. They're not going to be finding ways to help you learn and help you grow your craft. Like that wouldn't have been beneficial in any way. And now you're in a place that is beneficial, that is helping you grow, that you are learning your craft as you learn and grow through the trade. That's awesome.
Yeah,
so now that you've been there for a while, and now you've been fixing stuff in different categories, you fix some Porsches too, that's cool. What would you say is some of your biggest challenges outside of that? Like, put some things in perspective. What's some of the challenges that you've dealt with, whether it's tools, whether it's learning how to work with the other people in the shop? You know, have you had challenges learning? Because that's one of the things that I go down the road with in coaching, that many mechanics don't understand specifically how to learn for themselves, meaning every person learns a little bit differently. And we all learn basically one of three ways. You either learn through tactile, through visual, or through audio. And I have a test that I put folks through to try and figure out where their biggest component is. 80% of mechanics through my coaching have been, you know, heavy tactile, meaning 70% or more on the tactile learning, which means they have to physically touch things in order to learn how to do. What's been a challenge over the last, say, 5 or 6 years that you've had to consistently overcome that has nothing to do with outside sources?
I think just trusting myself and going with my gut instinct. Like, sometimes I could be replacing turbo, say, and I'll be a little bit on edge and I'll be like, right, I'm sure I've done that. That's tight. I've tightened it, yeah. It's just little things like that, because although you've got pressures from your managers and stuff to get stuff done, you also put a lot of pressure on yourself. So I think it's knowing, right, I know I've done that, tick that off the list, breathe, go on to the next thing. You don't like to not question myself all the time and to go with my gut, I think has been a hard one, because still in the back of my mind, I still have them guys from way back when. And if I fail at something, like if I just do something wrong, or it kind of does come back, and then I think, oh, this is it, I've fucked up, I'm not going to be any good or anything like that. It's just having the confidence in yourself. But then when you do sort of let go a little bit and see what you've done, you kind of breathe and you can feel a bit proud. So it's just trusting your gut. There's no harm in asking anyone to double check anything. I think it's just more having the confidence in myself to know that I'm worthy of it.
Awesome.
Oh my God, somebody get the Kleenex out. Jesus Christ, yeah, you're ruining the podcast.
No, that's important for a lot of folks to hear, because self-confidence, self-reflection, holding yourself accountable. I think the big one in there is understanding that You know, you bring up the fact that when you think about making mistakes, that moment years ago comes back up and laughing at you, as it were. I think many folks get into that and allow that to dictate how their decisions are made, like we spoke about earlier. But understanding that mistakes will happen. We're human. You cannot physically be perfect 100% of the time. It is physically impossible. And our craft is designed for us to do things 1,000 times and get better at doing it every time that we do it. That's how it's designed. So at some stage in there, something's going to get missed in some way. All your training is going to do at this stage is mitigate the level of fuck-upness, yeah. Right? You know, from day one, the first things you're going to do is you're always going to double-check wheels. Right? You're always going to double check wheels. It's just habit. It becomes part of the process. It will never be a problem past probably 6 months, because it's your shop foreman or your service leader or whoever it is going to be, it's like, torque the wheels, 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 torque the wheels. And they are going to hammer it and hammer it and hammer it and hammer it, because one of the easiest things to forget is to forget to torque the wheels. And bad shit happens when you don't.
Yeah.
But when you get that later on, yeah. When you get later on in your career, wheels are not the problem that you're thinking about. After you've just done a, you know, 85-step process repairing a turbo, let's say, or replacing a turbo, and you know, out of that 85 steps, every single one has maybe 3 or 4 bolts per process. You got 300 bolts and nuts and gaskets and things that you had to deal with and go through over that whole big process, remembering that every single one of those bolts is important, and torquing every single one of those bolts is important, and following the process for, you know, doing the software setup to make sure that the break-in on the turbo is proper and so on and so forth, and following each and every one of those steps is important. Well, it might just be a not quite torqued bolt that might be the mistake, and that somehow in 3 months' time, that car comes back with an oil leak because you didn't torque that second to last bolt on a cooler line or whatever the case may be. It's starting to leak. Well, could it be worse? Absolutely. Could it be better? Absolutely. But understanding you need to allow yourself to be human is part of that, because if you don't allow yourself to make mistakes in some capacity, and I don't mean literally make mistakes on purpose, but if you don't allow yourself to make mistakes, you're going to be so full of anxiety that you're not going to be able to get any good work done.
Yeah.
And I think that holds up a lot of people across the board, especially through coaching. It holds up a lot of people across the board. There are folks out there that think that they're worth $90,000, $100,000, $120,000 US to be able to turn wrenches for a living, but they're, you know, a C player at best because of their anxiety. Like,
yeah.
they hold themselves up from doing things because they're so afraid to screw up that they check things 5, 6, 7 times when, you know, they need to build their self-confidence more than they need to build their skill.
Yeah, 100%.
Is there somebody that you've encountered in, let's say, the last 5, 6 years that has represented someone close to or is a mentor to you?
I think all the lads that I work with in different ways, they're really good mentors, because there's so many. They all have different ways of doing things, and one of them could show me, say, something one way, and then someone else could come over the next day and go, oh, have you tried it this way? And I'll be like, oh, well, shit the fucking bed. That was so much more easier. It's not a bad thing, people, like, having multiple, like, mentors. I'll always ask the lads, mate, just because it's a bit of reassurance, but everything's a learning curve. So we've got, like, certain lads that are quicker at doing certain jobs than him over there, or I could be better at doing something than them. Like, I love doing interior jobs. It satisfies the shit out of me. So the lads will ask me stuff.
Do you like doing, like, upholstery stuff? Not just
interior, we don't, like, replace, like, the material, but it's, like, taking out the whole carpets, and because some of the jobs that we have to do, like, the heater flat motor is behind it's in front of the dash of an e-tron GT. So if that fails, that whole dash has got to come out. But to get that dash mm-hmm. out, you've got to remove the seat and the centre console, but centre console's attached to the back seat. Oh, love it. Partly because I'm 5'4", so I can fit absolutely everywhere in that car with no problem, and some of the lads are like... But, yeah, they've all got the ways.
5'11", okay, I'm 5'11" and 3/4" on a good day. So that
with my good difference shoes.
I'm over 6 feet with my good boots. So that's the only way I get to say I'm 6 feet. My wife calls me 6 feet, so that's at least gives me something. But yeah, that height difference does make a difference. It means you can fit anywhere. It also means that you can get shut in the boot without much difficulty.
Yeah. I've had that. And I've also had tires thrown over me. I have a picture somewhere, and I was sat down at a computer, and next thing, 3 tires have gone straight over me because I'm that small, and all you can see is just my hand at the top of the tires like this. It happens to the best of us.
And literally having this conversation this past weekend, I think once a level of comfort has been reached in the shop, you know, there's a line to be drawn, because I was literally talking about this with my mom. But if you're in a shop, I think if you are being ribbed and or insulted or having a go at or whatever the case may be, that is not the problem, right? If the lads are going at you for one reason or another, it's in good fun, in good faith, having a good time, roasting you, whatever the case may be. It's when they're not doing something, that's when there's a problem, because there isn't a level of comfort, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's almost like if someone's being too quiet, it's like...
I don't know if this
is recorded face-to-face, but if anyone's watching it...
It's exactly that. And folks, if you're listening on Spotify, you're missing all the good bits here. Jade's got some faces on here you need to see.
Jade's face now, is just something that you don't need to see.
Give me a break here. I appreciate the selfies tell me otherwise. Okay, the selfies tell me otherwise. Now, it also means that from your standpoint, and again, I'm going to ask this very specific to you, have any of that been, now that you're in the shop that you're in and you feel comfortable in that, has there been any moment where anyone's gone too far and you've had to deal with it?
No, I think, like I said, I'm quite lucky, but I think the lads are more scared of me than what I am of them. So usually I just have to give them a look, and they're like, oh, okay. Mm-mm.
Yep.
Call it too far. Okay. But no, they're actually mega softies, as much as some of them like to think that they're not. But I think if you are a female going into a workshop and, you know, you get like a good bunch of guys, what you'll tend to find as well is that men won't talk to each other. If something's on the mind, you know when something's up with him because he's quiet, and you'll end up being the agony aunt that they go to.
Mm.
And I think it is because we are girls and they feel a bit more like, I don't know if it's the whole, my dad's kind of like this kind of person where he's worried that it's a weakness if a man shows his emotions. So men tend to come to the women to vent because we're emotional, and I think it gives them a bit of ease. And since I've been in that workshop, I could write a book, mate. Honest to God. And some of it's like not... It's not something that I'd say like over onto a podcast, because some of it's really personal. Some of it's completely stupid shit. But they will always come to you, and it's really sweet, and I wish it was something that we could get about more, that men would maybe talk to each other a little bit more. I know some of them do, but not to the extent that they would if you're the female in there.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there. It's not necessarily a weakening, I don't believe, anyway. And this, I can really only speak for myself. But I don't think it's a weakening of a man's character to be able to talk about certain stuff. I find it difficult. I think many men find it difficult. I don't know whether it's easy. I don't know for me personally, because of the way I was raised, and because I've spent so much time now. I've been with my wife now for going on 23 years this year. So we talk about everything. But I've been able to talk with a lot of people about a lot of stuff over the last couple of years, because I've started to be able to talk about those things. But it's not, let me try to get a clear thought out here, because now I'm the one not being able to get words out.
It's not a weakness at all. At the end of the day, you're human.
But I do think that there is somewhere a level line, because I think there is an aspect of too much. And the reason why I say there is potentially an aspect of too much, not so much because it's too much for them to divulge, but they need to be telling it to the right person.
Yeah,
I think 100%. If you're in a state of mind that feels dark in any way, shape, or form, my first go-to response is you need to seek professional help. And the reason why I say that is not that I think that you need professional help, but more because I don't want people deluging whatever's in their head to another, shall we say, normal human being that doesn't have the tools capable of digesting the person, place, thing, emotion, circumstance, situation, whatever. Professionals are educated in therapy to be able to listen from, now they're still human, but from a listen from as an objective point of view as humanly possible. Yeah. Meaning when you give of yourself to a therapist of some description, somebody who is a professional designed to listen and give you advice based on those things, they are capable of taking on that burden. Someone at the shop, doesn't matter male or female, someone at the shop is not educated and designed and professional in a way to listen. The last thing they need is more stress in their life. Yes, your good friends are going to want to help, especially your bay mates, especially when you've been in that bay turning wrenches with a person on your left and a person on your right every day, all day, for years on end. They become like brothers and sisters. Like, to me, that's how it felt, and it's way it continues to feel. Even in as I grow older, they don't need the heavy, heavy shit. Like, they're going through enough shit on their own. They don't need more. That's when I say you need to seek professional help, because they are there to help you for that specific purpose. And I think the stigma is, if I go to therapy, I'm crazy, or there's something wrong with me. No, you just might need to get some shit off your chest. Would you agree?
Yeah, 100%. I think if you know somebody close enough and you might have that dark thought, it might surprise you that even if you did have a little chat, that it could lift off a lot of stuff. I know, I completely get why sometimes people don't talk, because when you don't understand what's going on in your own mind, how's anyone else going to understand it? And I completely get that. But I think once somebody realises that it's actually more stronger, you're talking about it, and if you need to see the help and get the help, you're actually more stronger than if you didn't and you let it overcome you, because that's when you're not doing the best for yourself. Because rather than being strong and outpowering it and going, do you know what, no, I'm not feeling like this forever, it's not who I am, and getting the help, you're actually a lot more stronger. So I've
exactly
just talk.
Awesome. So let's take a segue from there for a second. Let's talk about something that both of us do to try and get some of that throttle therapy out. What's your favorite thing about your EC? Because I'm sure if you're anything like me and anything like the majority of mechanics out there that love cars, that you will go out to the shop and work on the car when you need to vent.
Yes, my car is my therapy. I seen my car years and years back, and I was like, oh, want one of them. I'm going to have one of them one day. And I actually got one, and I was like, oh. But whenever I felt like absolute shit, I just drive him, and it's like I just zone out, and I'm in my own little world in there, and he's just, there's this a weird sense of home in that car than what there is compared to Move One. There's nothing wrong with Move One. I love both my boys the same, but there's just something about that one, and it's just, oh, yeah. I love the fact that, so he's a 32-year-old engine, the mm-hmm. original engine from Honda, dual mm-hmm. carb, manual choke. Oh, it's just, it's the authenticity of it, like the paint's the original. Minus his arches, not going to lie, because the arches had to get done. But it's just...
I wasn't going to say anything. I saw the pictures, and I bet you, and I saw the picture of it when I went to your TikTok, and I saw some pictures. And I looked at it and go, guaranteed that if we talk about that car, she's bringing up the arches. Mm. Guaranteed. I bet you it's literally like walking out and having a piece of dirt that you can't get off.
Yeah, it was just, they needed doing, so got them done. But everything else is original, obviously other than the wheels, but original. All the body panels, the sunroof. Because I was quite surprised when I first got this car, I didn't realise that it had electric windows and sunroof because of how old the car is. And mm-hmm. I was in it and I just pressed the button and I was like...
They work!
Are you seeing this? I was like, yes, no more windy braces. But it's the way the car feels, the way he looks. He's always a head turner wherever he goes. He's just, there's a sense of calm. Now,
32 years on, there will be very, very, very few of those cars still living. Let alone, I know they made a ton of them, but there will not be many of those around.
No, not at all. And this is how petty I am. So when I was getting that car, I told nobody. Told nobody because I thought, I'm gatekeeping this, because if any little bleeder goes out and gets one of these cars now, I'd be fucking fuming. And then 2 weeks after, somebody that I know went and bought one, and I was like... Zach on Google, how to commit arson.
Now, speaking of the other one... The other one of your boys. Now, is that just so that you don't have to put the miles on the EC?
Partially, yeah. And just because with the car being that old, there's no airbags, no ABS, there's no safety. The only safety you've got is the seatbelt. So mm-hmm. just for like in winter purposes, just so I don't die or kill somebody if they hit my car, that's my sensible one. So when it's gotcha. Summer... He's out, he's ready to play. My other boy can have a rest.
What so. Is winter, and now I've only been over once because my wife's father is Welsh. So we've been across the pond once and I need to go more. But what's summer for you for the car? Is it like May to September?
I mean, to be honest, British weather is completely shit all year round anyway. When we do get a bit of sun, it's nice, but it's nice. It seems like it forever changes. So, like, we've had no snow. We've had ice for, like, 2-3 days, and then it's sunny, and then it's raining, and then it's hailing. But we just get shit. I don't know. Never okay. moved to Britain.
Yeah,
but when it's summer, I
got my first motorcycle this past August, and I haven't even put 1,000 kilometers on it yet. And I had to put it away when I realized I couldn't ride it anymore. And put it away is just meanings I don't get to ride it. And I'm already having withdrawal, so I get the withdrawal sensation after a while of not being able to ride your baby. So yeah, I get you. So that, right, I think that's the.
Let's test how much of a petrol head you are. I'm going to turn the tables okay. right now. Josh is like,
turning the tables. Let me.
Right. Have you named your bike?
Yes.
What is the name?
So this, it took me a while because everything I came up with was shit up to the point. And it might still be shit in somebody else's eyes, but it's good in my eyes because I'm funny in my own head in some kind of way. And it's white and it's British. It's a Triumph 765R. And I know that if I'm not careful, it will try to kill me. So it's a bit of devil. And it's white. So the first thing that came to mind was a deviled egg. So that again, kind of funny, kind of makes sense in my head, but I'm not going to walk around and call a bike that's devil, that her name over there is deviled egg. That makes no sense. That's like a name that you give a boat or something. So I had to come up, be creative with it in some way, shape or form. So it's Deggy.
Oh, so
it's five letters. I'm going to be able to get a little, at some stage I'll use my wife's Cricut and I will cut out some stickable stuff and I'll put it on the side of her at some stage in the not so distant future, and she will, yes, so not only will I have named it, I will have also put her name on her, so on everybody her. Will know her.
She deserves it. Do you ever absolutely. Just do the little, like, when you've got what person, like
I did it yesterday.
Every time I go into the garage and I see Hunter in there, I'm like, mommy loves you, and I literally pat him and I go, I'll be driving you soon, don't worry. Mummy loves you. I mean, mum's just like, what the fuck?
I'm sure if anybody saw me do the things like that, they'd be doing exactly the same. Like, what are you doing? It's like, she's a good girl. She's just waiting here for me to go for a ride in the spring. It's okay. Just like petting her. It's okay.
For people absolutely. Watching Spotify, this has not turned into anything 18 plus rated, by the way.
No, we're good. No matter what profession we're in, we're keeping it clean. All right, so I think that leads us to the one last piece that we need to cover here, and I think we kind of already covered a couple, but what would be one piece of advice that you would give? What's one piece of advice that you would give a mechanic out there to be happier, healthier, more productive tomorrow?
Just do it for you. You don't have to justify your actions or anything like that. You've literally got you for the rest of your life. You'll spend more time regretting not going for something or not trying something than what you would if you did do it and failed, because you'd be always wondering what if. So take the bull by its horns and fucking go for that ride, motherfuckers.
Love it.
I'm so terrible.
Absolutely.
Welcome to the British. Love it.
No, I love it because that is exactly what I
preach.
I'd
rather be real.
Just go for it.
This is yes. me, folks. Sorry if you don't like it.
Well, on that absolutely epic bombshell drop to finish, that's exactly the way we need to end. So, Jade, thank you very much. I really appreciate the time. I really hope a lot of folks listen to this and understand that there are still jackasses out there. But at the same time, sometimes that's a lesson that someone needs to learn to be able to learn, grow, and do what they want to do. I really appreciate you sharing that and some of that really, really intimate stuff. I appreciate that. And I look forward to, stories in the future.
Thank you very much.
Well, folks, that's the end of another episode of the Wrench Turners podcast. And don't worry, folks, there will be coming another one next week. We've got a great show coming for you. I'm not going to share who it is. You're going to have to watch out and subscribe to find out who it is. One, don't forget, folks, Wrenches for Wrenches, the newsletter, bi-weekly newsletter, is continuing to come out every 2 weeks. Make sure you get onto LinkedIn. Make sure you hit the little notification bell so you get it every time it comes out. One just released this past weekend. Two, Wrench Turners merch, link in the bio. Make sure you check it out. And three, I continue to put out as much content as humanly possible. It's going to be daily through 2024, and I'm working on going twice a day through 2024. So our goal target for 2024 is 730 posts on LinkedIn and hopefully a post a week on TikTok. Appreciate you all. Love you all. And let's finish the show like we always do with a quote. I try to be smart by finding really intelligent people who have said things before, but this one really hit home. Because like Jade said earlier on, just do it. Well done is better than well said. Benjamin Franklin. Negative pushes, positive pulls, and always clean your toys before you put them away.